Welcome, C2, Dennis Jimenez.
Andale, go Gophers.
A long anticipated return guest, my brother in crime, partner in crime, Mr. Daniel Solis. We're here to talk about the upcoming election that's only weeks away. And I don't know who the groundhog is going to select as the possible winner, but I'm hoping it goes the way of justice, the way of compassion, the way of intelligence, the way of eloquence. And I'll leave it at that. And if you didn't understand what I said, then I know who you're voting for. But Danny, welcome. Glad to have you back, man. What's on your heart? What's on your mind, man?
Thanks for having me back. I share your concern about what the next couple months will bring us. You know what? When you and I first talked about me coming back last week, I had a whole set of things I wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. But Friday night gave us a shocker with the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No kidding, that was terrible.
And ever since then, I mean, the whole, all the game pieces have just been upended, man. The board looks totally different now. Game board looks totally different now. Come November, I'm not sure who benefits. To be honest with you, the Democrats don't really have a history of elections that are motivated or animated by the Supreme Court vacancies and possibilities. That's always been a rallying point for Republicans. So yeah. I'm wondering if some Republicans who were maybe thinking about voting for Biden won't say, well, you know what, maybe I need to just hold my nose and vote for Trump for this particular reason. Because a lot of Republicans are one-issue voters, and that issue has always been abortion. And yep. This may be something that they say, well, you know what, we can finally overturn Roe v. Wade. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm not quite sure who this animates, but I do understand that Democrats raised almost $100 million in a period of about two and a half days. Wow. Just off the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's astronomical.
Yeah.
Astronomical.
Exactly.
So, we'll see.
What do we know about the two ladies that are being touted as possible nominees by Trump?
Well, obviously, they have conservative credentials. They are young and would be on the court for a long, long time. So they probably don't have as extensive a judicial record as you would expect. But I don't think that matters right now. It doesn't matter for Republicans. If you look at the judges that they've been appointing to the federal courts, the district courts and the appellate courts, it's not about what your experience is. It's about how long you can serve. As long as you meet the threshold, which is conservative, they want you to be on there to impact the court in a conservative way. And so how long can you do it? In fact, it's just recently that several news articles have come out that Mitch McConnell was calling up old heads on the court and asking them to resign or consider resigning so that they could fill them before the election in case Trump did not win re-election. Their whole aim is to remake the judiciary as conservative as they can. They seem to be doing pretty good at it.
I'll never forget, I don't know if Trump was already president or was still running when he had a deal with a Mexican judge, and he just did not want a Mexican judge on whatever case he was involved in. And man, that just, kind of let me know this is what we're in for. And I think it was before he was elected that he made a really big deal about, we can't have this judge in our case because he's a Mexican. And he didn't hide anything about that. And that scares me because now he can nominate whoever he wants. Of course, he's not going to nominate any Mexican or Latina or African American. We already saw the two are white women. And like you said, with the right credentials, we'll vote, he hopes, the right way.
Right.
I will say I've been surprised by some of the justices that once they're in office, they do take fairness and justice a little bit more seriously than partisanship. And I think that's what all of them should do. Once they're in there, they need to be open to, fairness, justice, what serves the country best. And even, you know, when they tried to do away with Obamacare, the main justice, or the chief justice, Roberts, you know, voted the way he voted and kept it in place. And that was, you know, to me, very pleasantly surprising. And
right.
You never know.
No, you don't. But I think if you took all of Trump's judicial appointments since he's been in office, I think if you... you know, if you made a list of those who were institutionalists, and then you added another column for those who are bomb throwers, like he is, I think the list on the bomb throwers side would be longer. Yeah. You know, Republicans have grown less and less respectful of the institution and institutional norms, and I think that Brett Kavanaugh, I think. Looked the part, but I think if you look at him over time, you're going to find that he is not an institutionalist. And I think we're probably going to wind up getting more people like Brett Kavanaugh who are not institutionalists, who won't have any qualm about burning down the house.
Just and, what we need at this so, point in our history.
You know, we're in for a long haul fight here.
Well, what do you think are the chances for the Democrats to postpone this nomination or confirmation until after the election?
I think it's zero. You know, Mitch McConnell has been all over, Mitt Romney has been all over the map. One day he's supporting the president, the next day he's, you know, voting to impeach him and so forth and so on. You never know where he's going to land. He's a critical person. You have two senators that have already said they're not willing to move forward on this. You need four. And so, short of getting four, you're not going to avoid there being a vote. Now, when the vote happens, I'm not sure. But I think that there will be a vote. I think somebody will be seated, and I think it will cause irreparable damage to both the Senate and the Supreme Court. It's hard to take the Supreme Court the way it's constituted now, seriously, you can't look at it as a nonpartisan institution of government because it's been so damaged by the fight over Merrick Garland, the denying of him even getting a hearing, and then replacing him with that seat being filled by Brett Kavanaugh, who has really... character issues that should have been investigated and I think eventually will come out, especially if the Democrats win back the Senate. We're going to hear a lot more about Brett Kavanaugh and his escapades throughout his life. He's an admitted alcoholic. So, and then there were other stories out there about him being a sexual harasser, abuser, rapist. I think all those stories are going to continue to come to the forefront. So it's going to be... be tough on the Supreme Court. They, you know, they began to lose their credibility back in 2000 and when they blatantly just picked George Bush over Al Gore to be president. And ever since then, they lost a little credibility over time, more and more.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's going to be hard for them to maintain that.
Lord help us. So what were some of the things you wanted to say before Friday's tragic death of our beloved justice?
Well, I thought I had, I thought I was having an epiphany. I thought I was actually having, thoughts and ideas that were unique to me, but I'm glad that I'm not the only one thinking these things. I hear the word revolution a lot. You know, I'm pretty active on Facebook, and I posted that we need to be ready to move from resistance, which has been the word over the last 4 years since Trump got elected, to revolution. Now, that means different things to different people.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm not somebody that's prone to violence, and I don't believe that that's the way to handle political differences. But some of my thinking has changed over the last several weeks to things that I would have never thought that I would change my mind about. You know, for me, I think that if Trump wins an electoral college victory, I don't think he will. It's ever possible for him to win a popular vote election. But if he wins an electoral college victory, or he decides he doesn't want to give up office, or he comes up with some shenanigan to stay around. We need to take the fight to him in a different way. Instead of resisting him, maybe we need to help him do some of the things he wants to do as a way to show that, first and foremost, that his ideas don't work, but secondly, to try and rebuild this country in a more just and fair manner. For example, you know, I tell people all the time, get your money out of big banks. They are one of the things that have made this country unjust.
No kidding.
It used to be, if the banks would, take in money, and they would use it to lend money out to for the community good at an interest rate, a particular level, and they would also pay interest on your savings, your checking account. And the difference between what they paid and what they took in on interest and loans and so forth, they would make a profit and they would share that with people. That's totally different. Now, they don't pay interest on anything. Their whole business model now is to try and gouge you with fees, and in many cases, try to trap you or try to trip you up to where you have to pay even more fees. Look up the idea of, if you Google the idea of Big One First, where they try and hold your checks. For poor middle class, working class people, try to hold checks to make sure that they can trip you up and try and get you to bounce your checking account. It's crazy. Go to local banks, go to state banks, and hurt the big banks, because they don't lend you money anyway. They don't lend money for you to buy a car, to buy a house, or anything like that. We need to put the pressure, economic pressure, on big banks. Stop going to red states.
Yep.
Don't go anything. Don't buy anything from red states.
What about healthcare? The insurance companies are kind of like that as well.
Exactly. I haven't really been able to put my head. That's a very interesting. You know this. I haven't spoken too much about this. I'm dealing with a chronic health problem, and I've gotten my PhD in insurance and how all that stuff works. It's a mirage. You see on paper is not what's really happening behind the scenes. It's hard for people to understand because we don't know what actually goes on, rural areas complain all the time about their lack of medical care, their access to medical care. Where are you going to find hospitals? You're going to find them in the big city,
Yes.
And I've always said for the longest time, we need to find creative ways to bring health care to the rural areas. I'm not inclined to that anymore, to be honest with you, because rural people are, for the most part, I would say 80% of rural people are stuck in the mentality that the only thing that matters is guns and abortion. But yet they wind up getting screwed just as bad as anybody else does.
Yep.
You know?
And they don't see it.
And this goes back to my original point, is that, okay, fine. If your idea is to cut the deficit and cut the national debt by reducing taxes and cutting services, go ahead. Who are you going to hurt? The biggest takers are red states, and the biggest contributors are blue states. You know, maybe we need to work on, I call this kind of an oil slick. It's an idea I got from somebody else. But, you know, maybe the way to change our society is not at a national level, but at a local level. And I'll tell you, urban societies, suburban societies, they have the resources to make this happen, especially if you can cut federal spending. And that allows them more opportunity to leverage more resources at the local level from people to do things like community health plans, or expanding the access to food, where at the federal government a lot of people are so dependent on on things like food stamps and so forth. urban areas would be more apt to be able to provide those things at a more cost-effective level than the federal government. Now, does that help rural people? Does that help red states? No, it doesn't. But, you know, they've chosen their path.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I hate to say that because, this goes back to my heritage as someone in Hispanic, family-oriented. The family unit is primary. You know, my religious background about unity and working together. Maybe we just need to think ourselves as free agents. And how do I, let me get together with like-minded people to work on particular issues to better myself and my community, those that are willing to participate. Because I tell you, as much as I like politics, I don't think politics is going to save us from the things that are coming, you know? Because I think a lot of the things I'm talking about are going to happen either way. Yeah. I mean, we've already seen the start of the dismantling of Social Security with this harebrained idea of canceling, you know, the payroll tax. That money goes directly to Social Security.
Yeah.
If you don't have it available, then all of a sudden, who's going to get Social Security? And I think we've already seen during this pandemic how vital Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are. They may not be available, but you know what? Maybe we need to, if we plan for ourselves, maybe we can undermine the, because the purpose isn't just to undo those things. Oh, that's to punish people. Rich whites and the rich in general, they have a disdain for poor people. It helps them. It benefits them. And maybe we shouldn't be so willing to be their victim.
Well, how likely is that a Biden administration will tax the rich and, you know, take some of the tax burden off the working middle class?
Well, he's already backed away from his initial pledge that he was going to just completely roll back the Trump tax cut. I think that the rich are not going to be able to escape a tax cut. We are, at the national level, in financial dire straits right now.
Yeah.
Some economists will tell you that it's not possible for the national government to go bankrupt or anything. There's nothing necessarily inflationary about printing more money or borrowing more money, rather. That hasn't necessarily been tested, but it may come to that because they're going to, I was reading today, the COVID cases are going up. When we thought they were tapering, there's a new surge is going on in places that haven't been as affected as others yet. You know, we're going to be dealing with this for a long time, and people are going to be looking for some kind of help. The government is going to want to help them in certain cases. At least I think. I'm not so sure about that. We haven't seen any movement yet on another stimulus. But where are they going to get that money from?
Well, it is scary. The number of businesses here in our area and in your area as well, I'm sure all across the country, you know, especially bars. Not that I have a great affinity and love for bars, but they're hurting. You know, if they don't start serving food soon, they're going to be. And that's the way some of the local news stations are saying they're getting around it, by offering food. And so they come in and then they can serve them drinks and start making money there. But not everybody's doing that. And they're crying, where's our next stimulus help? And that's a good question. Yeah. Where is it?
It's kind of, if you think about it, really, it's kind of funny that initially everybody joined in this effort to provide some kind of stimulus to, you know, small business and stuff. Because isn't the premise of a free market economy a survival of the fittest? You know?
Yeah.
But when it comes for time for you to need something, you throw that idea out the window, and you're looking for assistance from the government. You would think that this pandemic economically would show us, the need for good functioning government. Some people have yet to realize that, and unfortunately, most of them are Republicans. So, even Governor Abbott, and the lieutenant governor, who are always, you know, free market advocates and have changed their stripes more than once since this whole thing has started. It's just hypocritical, you know, but we need to they need to have that perspective, not just in bad times, but in times where we have the ability to do more than what we were doing before.
That's exactly the case. How realistic is your plan, your ideas? You know, what are some other examples of things that Trump would like to do that might, you know, show people, hey, let's not get ready to elect Ivanka, you know, next time around, you know, to keep the Trump dynasty alive? Say more about that.
Yeah, well, you know, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
At all, and we have a large number of people. Well, even before this election, if you think about it, there were a lot of young people. Well, there were a lot of Americans, period, who came out of the 2007-2008 economic crisis with a bad taste in their mouth for capitalism, because they saw that capitalism wasn't working for them, and hasn't. I mean, I still have friends who lost their jobs, lost their careers in the Great Recession, and they never have recovered since then, you know? And that's changed their attitude. So there, even before Trump was elected, there was this, you know, hostility towards capitalism because people saw that it wasn't working for them. And so now we have a political crisis, have had a political crisis, and it would not surprise me to see things change. We've already seen them change. I mean, in my lifetime, I never would have thought I'd see a president who would be so brazen about his lack of disregard for political norms with regard to his relationship with Congress. I mean, isn't that supposed to be, you know, the foundation of our democracy's checks and balances? That doesn't exist anymore. No. Or that there not be political influence in how the executive branch and works with the judicial branch. It's just supposed to appoint the judges and be done with it. Not anymore.
No.
I mean, they're working it to where their buddies don't even have to go to jail. Hmm. You know, I even have to been found guilty. So, you know, maybe we're heading for a status of a second-rate democracy. You know, if you look at that, if you look on the website, Democracy, let me think about what it's called. I'll have to get back to you on it, but there are websites that gauge the level of democracy in countries around the world. The United States has fallen on that index for the first time for the first time, period, because the way that our democracy is functioning now is equivalent to, you know, a lot of people who don't have the type of history with democracy that we do. So I'm not very hopeful. And then you have people beyond the Trump family who are lining up to succeed Trump who want to be even more extreme than him because they see that he got away with all this stuff, and they're thinking, I can do even more than he. I can do it better than he can. Probably can, because Trump is crazy and an idiot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not, I'm not hopeful. I don't know, it's going to take a generation or two before we finally get back on track. And there are going to have to be some changes in the laws as well. And until you get those changes codified in the law, I don't think that you'll ever, all this money, out of politics. And, you know, I just got through talking about how the Democratic organizations raised over $100 million in a couple of days over the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. While I'm happy for that in this particular instance, I would be even happier if money didn't play the role that it does in our political process, because that taints everything.
Yeah. Well, you have the example of this guy using the White House as his backdrop during the Republican National Convention, which is against the law. And it's, you know, just come and arrest me, you know. What chance do you think, Daniel, is there for him? Let's say he loses the popular vote, he doesn't win the electoral vote, and he's out of office and he leaves. Lord, hear our prayer. of him getting arrested and, you know, having to face for all of his crimes. What hope is there for that?
Well, when you say all of his crimes, I'm not sure what they have on him at the state and local levels. I think that there's a lot there, but there's not been a lot of, information about what they have. At the federal level, it's going to be political again. Even if he had, for example, a Biden overwhelming victory and this guy, Trump, decides to leave, there's going to be some of the same criticisms. Well, is he being targeted, because of Democratic disdain for him? And, is Biden misusing the Justice Department? While I would like to see him prosecuted, that would be, I would like to know for sure that this was an actual crime that was committed, a big time. I would hate to see him get caught up on some quote-unquote technicality, only because I think that would lend itself to undermining further people's faith in the federal government, which is just taking a beating over the last several years. I think that there needs to be some kind of a truth commission where people see exactly what happened. You know, we hear this story recently within the last week about doctors performing hysterectomies on patients in Georgia who were being detained in ICE facilities. There hasn't been a thorough investigation of that, but that's something that we need to look at. I mean, were women forcibly sterilized in ICE detention, and who ordered that, and who was involved? We need to know that. That's the kind of thing that we need to know. And I think a truth commission, for lack of a better name, would be the right group to do that. So people will know if case charges are brought, criminal charges are brought against somebody, they know that they're based in fact.
Yeah, that's true. The Truth Commission would be vital to investigate not only Trump, but all of his administration, all of the people that, could have had a hand in that, if it indeed happened the way, it's been reported.
Yeah.
You know, the latest I saw on that was...
funny thing, too, once you're out, you're out, and people are no longer scared of you. It's very possible that, all of a sudden people start coming out of the woodwork and testifying providing information to prosecutors at all levels about Trump. And, he's going to be required to make, I don't know how thorough they've been about this. I doubt they've been thorough at all. But, there's a requirement that you keep, papers and records and things that were produced during your administration. People can comb through that and find evidence of crimes if they didn't destroy anything. And so, but you never know who may come forward to corroborate and say, you need to look at this and look at that. So he may have a lot to have to answer for, whether he gets indicted or prosecuted or sentenced to any kind of for punishment. I don't know, but I think he's going to have his hands full.
Yeah. Well, not even Nixon, when he finally resigned, did the country, or at least me, I didn't have that kind of anger and disdain that I have at this point toward the current one. And he kind of turned into, according to some, into a distinguished elder statesman, and I doubt Trump could ever write that out on a piece of paper, let alone truly become one.
Right. Well, and I agree with you about Nixon. I mean, he rehabilitated his own image. I mean, I remember reading most of his books that he wrote after he resigned. And, it's incumbent on the person. Even Jimmy Carter, if you think about it, even though he didn't resign in disgrace, he was thoroughly thumped at the polls, which was just a total repudiation of his administration. But, you know, he worked at rebuilding his image. I think if you took a poll now, most people would say that right behind President Obama, that Jimmy Carter was probably their, you know, their most beloved living president.
Yeah.
You know, whether he doesn't, I don't think that Trump has that thing in him that wants to ask for forgiveness. Look like he's asking for forgiveness.
No.
Doesn't have the ability to be contrite, or to reconcile with anything or anybody. So, I think that he'll be a thorn in our side until he dies or we die. Whichever comes first.
Yeah. Yeah. His three motivating things, in my opinion, power, money, and sex. And never mind that he's married, you know, it's still very much an issue for him or a desire in his life.
Yeah.
And as long as he's alive, he's going to be pursuing those three things, I think, if not more.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he got a divorce from his wife after. I have no basis for this, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got a divorce from his wife after he leaves the White House. They never seem to be very happy in each other's presence, at least even in public. And you hear all kinds of stories. And she would benefit from a divorce, especially since she renegotiated her prenuptial agreement. So it'll be interesting. He's not going to live a quiet life after he leaves the White House. He may still be able to rally those folks that, you know, that big, sizable MAGA group out there. Hopefully not.
Yes, indeed. I mean, he's got that Trump Tower where he can hide, and he's got the Mar-a-Lago down in Florida where he can hide, but he doesn't have to hide when he's in Florida or Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, all of those states. And my apologies to the good people of those states, but the bad people in those states, come on. Come on.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of story he tells. If he writes a book like other presidents have immediately following, you know, leaving office, how he tells the story will give us some indication of what we can expect from him for the rest of his time on his earth or ours. But I'm not very hopeful that it's going to be anything positive. I think he thinks that, and I think his children think that they're his heir apparents, and that. No matter what happens to his father, that they're set to take over the helm of the MAGA crowd. And they may be, but I think that they won't have an easy time as their dad did.
Lord,
it never goes well for the kids.
Lord have mercy on the United States of America. Well, how do you think the VP candidate's going to do if indeed Biden is elected and then Vice President Harris steps in? What kind of hope do you have for her?
Well, for the VP candidate?
Yes.
I think Kamala Harris will find a niche in the White House for herself. I think that she's going to play an important role in speaking to these issues of racial justice and police reform. And, you know, I think it's a good, important opportunity for the country because no matter how progressive you are or how idealistic you are, how hopeful you are on these matters, if you're a white guy, you just don't have the same ability to speak to the issue as someone who has lived in the community, has lived with the people who have suffered these kinds of injustices, like Kamala Harris has, or anybody else of color. And I think that she brings that. You know, everybody has their natural constituency. The folks that are living through these things. That's her natural constituency, so she gives them voice in the White House, and I think that's so critical. It's so
It was interesting how the MAGA crowd right away were challenging her blackness. You know, how black are you really, Kamala?
It's funny because when you think about it, and you look at some of these people that have been victims of police violence, the police don't make any judgment on their color. Some of these folks have not been African American per se, but have been more Dominican, Puerto Rican, Cuban. But the fact that they were black, the police don't make such judgments, so I don't know why the MAGA folks would be making those kinds of judgments.
Exactly. Let's shift gears a little bit. Daniel, tell me, in your opinion, what's going on in Fort Hood here in Texas? You know, that base has lost so many soldiers, especially Latinos, Latinas. What's going on, you know? Venture a guess? Yeah.
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I think it stems just from the hostility that there is in our society these days for people that are not like us, or for women. You know, over the last 4 years, I've experienced this rise in male attitudes for dominance over women. And I think that it's played that itself out in several ways, including, you know, violence against them. And that can happen in any place, not just in the military. I think it happens in a lot of places. You know, and I think that there's just this unspoken permission that people have gotten over the last 4 years from the top down.
Yep.
That, hey, I can just do whatever I want to do without repercussions. Look at these guys. They're getting away with it. Why won't I?
Yeah, that's been kind of sad. I mean, I saw a little clip of something like that where the woman was having a conversation at a rally, and she made that, you know, how can you grab women by the, you know, the private parts and still support somebody that's making it famous? And he said, well, wasn't that what women were made for? And walks away and laughs.
Yeah.
And that's sad, but very sad, very tragic, very stupid.
It is. And, you know, there's this, one of the people that have been pushed for a possible replacement to Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court, you know, she's a believer in, you know, men should rule over women, you know, be dominant over women. And a lot of people have had that, or they speak that more frequently than what I've heard in the past. Some of it's religious, and some of it is you know, people's own personal beliefs of that's dangerous talk. It really is, because too often it leads to violence.
What else is on your mind, Daniel? What should we be talking about?
Well, I'm going to be interested to see how Cubans, I'm not talking Latinos, I'm talking Cubans, specifically Cubans in Florida, do what they do in this election. People are right to say that the Hispanic community, Latino community, is not a monolithic group.
Right.
But you would think that there would be some reciprocity. You know, for example, what I mean is there have been one set of immigration rules for Cubans, and there have been another set for everybody else. I don't ever remember Hispanics or Mexican Americans, people of Mexican American descent, or maybe of other Hispanic groups, Latino groups, ever begrudge that of Cubans. But I don't hear too many people outside the Mexican American community who are Latino or who are Hispanic origin really come out and say, look, we don't like what's going on at the border. We need to revamp our immigration policy. In fact, you had at least one Cuban leader, Marco Rubio, start the whole process of immigration reform and then walks away from it, his own plan, you know, which he knew would have helped people who are in the DACA program, or who are sitting in detention centers on the border and in other places. It's ridiculous. So I'm interested to see what the Cuban community does on the election, because this is kind of feeding my everybody for their own sake mentality, or shifting mentality, because I want to believe that that there is some desire for unity, but everywhere I look, I'm seeing proof of just the opposite.
Yeah. Sadly. Well, what hope do you have for Joaquin Castro in the future? Do you think he'll play a part in the new cabinet if Biden comes in?
I hope so. You know, if you listen to him, or if, both brothers, if you listen to either one of them, they're well-spoken, well-thought-out. They have well-thought-out plans. You know, one of them obviously has federal experience, well, experience in a federal agency. And so... I'm hoping that they'll continue to be a significant voice, and I think they will be. I think that people would be depriving this country of good leadership if they didn't take advantage of that.
How many Latino cabinet members did Trump have?
That would be hard-pressed to tell you. I'm sure there's one or two, but I couldn't tell you who they are. I don't. Maybe under cabinet, maybe under secretaries, I'd be hard pressed to say that there's even one. I'm gonna have to go check that out.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess there's none. You know,
I said, under secretaries. Right. There may have been, but with all the scandals that they've had, all the turnover that they had, that person probably got so recycled out or cycled out so soon in the administration, we've long forgot about who they are.
Yeah,
it's just been a revolving door of people.
And that was the other thing. Trump didn't hide the fact that he thought there was nobody qualified to serve. And,
And at least we know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
You know, it's just disgusting. But, he does say what he means. And I take him at his word. But I also know that from what I've heard, he's a racist.
Yeah. And so many people would holler and jump on us and say, that's not true, it's not true. Prove it, you know.
Yeah, well, if they would sit down and listen to his own words with an open mind, but they're not going to do that. People we're so polarized to the point where we won't even listen to people's own words and accept them as fact.
Yeah. And with a man that changes his mind, or says, no, I didn't say that, or I didn't mean that, or it was taken out of context, or misunderstood the question, what can you believe? The easy answer for me is very little, if anything at all.
Right. You asked me what's on my mind, or what I see coming down the pike. I think that if the Democrats are elected, they are going to have to play hardball against Republicans. And I think if you don't see them playing hardball against Republicans, then I think that they're going to lose a lot of support, because people want to see real change, real action. And I think if you start to just be incremental about things, then I think you're going to lose your support. They're going to have to find ways to save the Affordable Care Act, regardless of what the court does, either reinstate it through legislation, or just go big and say, you know what, we're going to just expand Medicare and have universal health care, something. But they're going to have to go big, because these coalitions that the Democrats keep building are fragile. And I'll tell you this, too. If the Democrats don't win this election, I think people have been prognosticating the death of one of these two political parties for over the last 30 years. It seems like every time there's an election, well, if whoever loses, that's probably going to be the end of the party. I think I was betting that the Republican Party would implode before the Democratic Party does. But if they lose this election, I think that they're toast.
Yeah.
You know, and... some of what I'm seeing is leading me to think, you know what, you just need to move away from political party politics and concentrate more on political organizing at the local state level.
That's what worked for Barack Obama. Started at the local organizing level, worked himself up, became senator, and one of the greatest presidents in recent history, in my opinion.
What do you think? My opinion too.
What do you think it's going
to take? My lifetime.
Yeah. what do you think it's going to take, Daniel, to unite the country in a way without a major war or a major attack on us? What would it take to truly unite the United States of America?
You know, it would be hard to say in the past. I think what might help us to unite now, which is not the constant tweets, the constant chaos that we get every day from this president. You know, you see the memes on Facebook and another social media, like, yeah, now I got to wake up and check my, you know, my Facebook account to see what crazy thing this president said or did today. I think if people could just get arrested from that, I think that that would help tone down a lot of the noise, alleviate some of the tension, and then people can go back to, you know, just talking about the everyday stuff where people can find some common ground. I think, too, if we can do, if Biden's going to have to work quickly to revitalize the economy, and he's going to have to point to areas where, you know, the shovel's flying, the dirt's flying. And I think he has experience doing that. I hope he knows that. I think he does. You know, he's going to have a short time frame with which to show some results. And that, I think that if that he's capable of doing that, I think that that would help to unite the country as well.
Anyway, the COVID pandemic could unite the country?
I don't know. Well, yes. And I don't like this scenario. But when you're talking about 500,000 people dying, which is a possibility within the next, 10 months, I think that has a tendency to unify people, could help to unify people. I mean, there are certain things that we already know that are working or could work if everybody jumped on board. Masks, social distancing, staying at home, you know, all that simple public health stuff has shown itself to work. And it's possible that, you know, if we said, okay, we're going to wring this out of our society, even if it means going through some hard times, I think that could. We've not been asked to do that. We've not been asked to do anything, to be honest with you. The president has not done anything to say, I need you to sacrifice. If you look back at some of the toughest times that we faced as a country, George Bush did it. Lyndon Johnson tried to do it, and Franklin Roosevelt. You know, we're going to have to make major sacrifices in order to win this situation, to become successful. If this president has not done that, I think Joe Biden could do that, and I think that that would be one way to unite the country.
Yeah. You're going to have a faction of the MAGA group that's going to right away say, you're taking away our rights. You know, you can't force me to stay home. You can't force me to wear a face mask. None of this really has been proven to work, you know, blah, blah, blah. See you at the funeral.
Yeah. You know who has a lot of impact on that? It's big business, or just business, period. You know, I live in one of those towns. If I go around the corner from my house, compound that is flying American flags and Trump flags, very high, so and very visible for everybody to see. You know, this is obviously Trump town, but you know what the businesses are saying? They have signs in the doors and they'll come in without a mask.
Yeah.
So I think big business has a lot to do with changing public behavior. I mean, if you can't go into your favorite restaurant or, you know, can't go get a haircut, unless even the people that I've gone to get a haircut from, they have big signs on you need a mask.
Yeah.
And they're not Republican, or they're definitely Republican folks. you know, if they're requiring you for a mask, it's going to be hard for you to get around it. You may not like it, but too bad.
Closing thoughts, Daniel Solis.
Closing thoughts. I think we're in for some interesting times politically. Socially, I think that we need to be ready for some upheaval. Not just politically based upheaval, but I think economic, social upheaval. And I'm interested to see how education evolves as a result of what they're facing now. You know, we used to think that you had to go to the school down the street, but now we're finding out that you don't necessarily have to do that. But we are also finding out that online education is not the answer or the permanent replacement for that. So how does education evolve over the next 5 years?
That's a good point and a good question. Well, I want to thank you, Daniel, for coming on the Situ Show with Dennis Jimenez. I'm going to get this out as quickly as I can, promote it with all your friends and share it. Forwarded to someone. And again, Daniel, we'll have you again back really soon. I want to thank you for showing up and sharing your wisdom with us. And I want to wish you the best in all that you have ahead of you, your schooling, your health challenge, and your family, beautiful family. And I pray God's rich and wonderful blessings upon you. Thank you for being on the show with me.
Great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Daniel Solis, one of the great minds I know, political minds, thinking minds, caring minds. It's also a very good theological mind. Daniel Solis from Dallas, Texas, we thank you for your being with us today. We look forward to having you back on the Situ Show with me, Dennis Jimenez. I pray all is well.
Orale, Rosa.